You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Ulster.
Hi, everyone, and you're welcome back to Cawley's Call, Series 3, Episode 14. Delighted to have you, as always. Thanks for all the feedback from last week as well. Tommy Higgins seemed to go down well. But we have an even bigger guest in with us, not in size now, in stature. We've saved this one for a long time, to be fair. And myself and Stewie are very much looking forward to it, because I'm not speaking on behalf of Stewie, but I'm sure he'll agree he's the best manager that we ever had. So the great Pat Fenlon is in with us. Pat, good to see you.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm
great. Know you've been on a few dodgy podcasts before this, but this is the real deal, this one.
So I'll tell you after this podcast whether you're the greatest manager I've ever been.
Was I speaking on behalf of you there? I'm sorry.
You're just a bit premature, okay? There's a few things I have to iron out in this
podcast.
There's
a few names on the list, is there?
No, there isn't.
Pat, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm looking forward to it, to
How
be honest.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm good. All good at the moment. Very busy. Obviously, back of another good season and preparing for Europe now. So, yeah, keeping busy.
Yeah, just off the back of another league title. I was only looking this morning. Sure, you must be sick of winning league titles at this stage with all the different clubs. But obviously, you're at Linfield now, Pat. And a different role in terms of course, we know you as the manager, but director of football role up there. Just how does that play out in terms of, I suppose, it's something new for Ireland, I suppose, compared to maybe you'd hear it more often in the Premier League or different clubs across the continent. But for here at home, what's the day-to-day stuff?
I mean, it's the day-to-day is more of a general manager's role on running the day-to-day club all the way through with the staff we have there. So, yeah, it's a different role, obviously, of being involved as a player, coach, manager, director of football at Waterford, and then the role I have now at Linfield, so sort of spanned all areas of the clubs, which is great because it gives you great knowledge and
still
experience.
Looking fresh.
Yeah, well, listen, it helps when you're winning leagues. I've been fortunate that the clubs have been successful in Linfield as a player as well, and now this is going into my fifth season, so we've won the league the other four seasons I've been there, which is, you know, great testament to the manager and the players that we have. We have a very, very good young manager. Who will go places not too shortly, because his record is fantastic. So and we have a really good setup. It's a really good club. It always has been. Even when I was a player there, it was a club that was just different to the rest of the clubs in relation to how it was run, how it was structured, and it's still as good and hopefully getting better. We've gone from part of my role when I went in was to develop a 5-year strategic plan, which we've done, and we're good bit into that now, and the team has gone from a part-time setup to full-time in the last 12 months as well, so everything going well. And good league this year, tough league. You know, there's 4 or 5 teams now in that full-time mode, which is brilliant. You can see the improvement in the game, and in fairness to Cliftonville, who weren't full-time, they stead were us all the way to the end, and we won it by a point in the end, which was the smallest of margins, but it was a great achievement because we had a big turnover of players at the end of last season because of the transition from part-time to full-time. Obviously some players were in good employment and didn't want to give that up, which you can understand, and then we had some other players coming to, I'd say, the twilight of their career that moved on, and we lost Shane Lavery to Blackpool, who was our top goal scorer, so full international as well. So
big changes.
Yeah, big changes, and that's where the manager deserves huge credit, because to be able to continue to do that, the pressure's always on at Linfield to win league titles, but to do that on the back of a transition to full-time and a huge change over the players is fantastic, and he deserves all the praise he gets.
It's quite unique, Pat, obviously the fact that you're Irish and you went up the north and played as a player, and we saw it, I suppose, for the first time when we played in the Setanta Cup, and we knew obviously they were very fond of you up there, but there is that divide, as we all know about, and the history and all that kind of thing, Catholic, Protestant. But we couldn't believe, well, I certainly couldn't believe the reception and all that you were getting and the love up there. So now, obviously, the fact that you're back in the role, of course, the club are very, very fond of you. But Was that strange in the early days, say when you go back to your playing days, when they came about in terms of maybe you signing for them? Was there difficult decisions to be had, difficult conversations with family?
Of course there was, yeah. It was 1994, so it was right at the, I suppose, I won't say the end of the Troubles, but it was still a time that wasn't nice in the island. So it was a decision that, it wasn't difficult from a football point of view, and that's all I wanted to do was play football. And you know, my time had probably come at Bowes where I thought it was time to freshen up and get something different. I had an offer to go and sign for Ards, which I didn't want to do. And then the great Roy Coyle was managing Ards at the time. I met Roy, and then Linfield just came in. And yeah, it was a difficult decision in relation to that. But I've always said, and I'll go record is the best club we've played for. That's really? Not being disrespectful to any of the clubs I've played for. I've been very fortunate to play for Bowes, Shells, Shamrock Rovers, you know, great clubs.
Oh, Chelsea.
And St. Pat's as well. Well, we'll leave that one for the moment. but St. Pat's as well, I started my League of Ireland career, we're under a brilliant manager in Brian Kerr. So, but playing for Linfield was special. I have to be honest, it was just, it was at the time you felt like a player, if that makes sense, as former players hoping the time at Shells, that was a feeling that you felt like a player. But Linfield was like that when I went there, even though it was part time, it felt like you were playing for a proper football club or a proper fan base. And the other big thing that really I look forward to was playing under pressure. The pressure to win was something that it's, you know,
was the expectation massive back then?
Yeah,
all the time.
It still is. It's no difference. Air supporters expect us to win every game, and it was like that then. But I enjoyed that. That's probably the bit I really enjoyed, that expectation that you had to go out every week and perform, or else you got it in the neck.
Yeah.
and
who was the manager at that time? Actually,
Trevor Anderson was the manager. Trevor Northern Ireland International was at Manchester United. Lindsay McCombs assistant, and it just worked. I was very fortunate. Like these things, you know, when you move clubs, I went to Linfield. I think it was January of that year, and within 5 months we had won. They just won one of the trophies and won the other three in that short period of time. We'd won the League Cup, we'd won the Irish Cup, and we won the league on the last day of the season against Glentoran, which sort of gives you plenty of clues, and scored one of the goals. So that all helps. And
was that when they took to you straight away? That was it?
Yeah.
That goal?
To be honest, the first 3 or 4 months there, I was terrible. I had a bit of an ankle injury and I probably shouldn't have been playing. And you know, when you go to a new club, you don't. And I struggled. And then I just found a little bit of form and it just took off. I was brilliant. The last day of the season is, you know, to see that, look back on that 93-94 season is incredible finish to the season. We played a League Cup final on a Tuesday, we won. We played in Newry on a Thursday and dropped points, which we thought had blown the league. And then we played Glentoran the last day of the season, and Glenavon played Portadown, who were first and second. We were third. So both of them drew and we won.
So you were third on the last day of the season.
So we jumped and won the league, and it was some finish. Yeah,
on you mentioned there, Pat, that obviously Cliftonville stayed with you this year and it was very competitive, the division. Was it as competitive back then when you would sign and play it as well?
Yeah, we had a lot of good teams then. A lot of players from down south were playing
in
the league then.
That's what I actually remember. Probably the better players would go to the north. Mm. That's my memory of it. It was a bad time for the league here. I remember a lot of the better players were going up to the north.
Yeah, I think that for financial reasons.
Yeah, most of that was probably down to finances. And you know, you look at the teams, some of the teams, the Portadown, Glenavon were really, really strong teams at that stage. Glentoran probably weren't as strong as they had been, but both of them teams, particularly Glenavon and Portadown, even at the likes of Bangor, you know, had a lot of Southern players as well. Cliftonville, a lot of Southern players. So it was a strong enough league. You know, if you went up on a train the Saturday morning, we all travelled together, so you had probably 20 odd players playing for different clubs on the train on the way up and on the way home. So
go crack.
Yeah, absolutely. It was in the days where you could have a beer on the train after games.
Let's get to the stories, Pat.
You
avoided the checkpoints as well, I presume, didn't you? Because if you had driven up, you would have probably gone through.
It was at that time, I used to go up twice for training. A lot of the lads probably went up, started training with League of Ireland clubs, but I used to go up on a Tuesday and a Thursday to train with Linfield, and he used to send, and he's still there, the kit man, Gary Eccles, who'll come down and pick me up at the Fairways Hotel
in
Dundalk, because at that stage you had checkpoints and you had scares and whatever else. So and they dropped me there back after training and I drive home. So it was peculiar in that regard, but it was at that stage. We got Desi Gorm was there, Gary Haylock was living in Dublin, and then we signed Paul McGee, we signed Alan Bourne. So it was good. There was a few of us there at the time, so it was It was a very, very good side, I have to be honest.
Yeah, because I spent a few months towards the end when I finished up, but I went up for 6 months up to Portadown. And like that, there was a bit of kind of, you're not going up to Portadown, but went up, and we had Brian Gartland and James Chambers used to travel up with us. Not James Chambers, Brian Gartland, Gary Breen. James Chambers used to go to Waterford. Mm. But they couldn't have looked after us any better. It was actually unbelievable. They looked, honestly, Stu, like, just like Pat said about Linfield being the best club, in all the years I played down here with the different clubs, they looked after us unbelievably well. It was actually incredible, to be fair to them. Ronnie McFall was the manager up there.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked back at the end, because I was just going up, literally just going up on a Saturday, and was collecting a wage more or less, because I only played for 4 or 5 months and I was finished. And I was sorry then I never maybe tried it out 3 or 4 years previous, or, you know, because as I said, it looked after us so well.
Yeah, Ronnie was there when I was playing for Linfield. Ronnie was the manager of Portadown. He was there a long, long time.
Is he not still
very
there?
Very good manager. No, he's not still there.
He was the longest serving, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was there a long time and won a lot of trophies, and they had a really good side when he was in the league and playing for Linfield. So, very, very good club as well, Portadown.
On that, Pat, so say, for example, you saying how good it was back then, and I suppose our experience of it was maybe my little 6 months of Portadown, but then when we went up and played in the Setanta Cup and we'd see different teams and whatever, why did the league kind of never really progress, say, from back in the 90s like you and a big club, Linfield, to, like, obviously it's in a very good position now and Windsor Park has been redeveloped and the club are going well, but say, for example, how it's taken maybe a lot longer for the clubs to go full time, whereas down here it's probably been a bit quicker with our clubs?
Yeah, I think it's probably mentality. You don't forget it's a small place as well, you know. So there's you know, some of the big clubs, the likes of Linfield and Glentoran, have huge supports for the league they're in. And it was probably more of a mentality thing of how can we change, how can we make it better. And we've had this discussion up there, and it's still a discussion at the moment around summer football and all that sort of stuff. Can you enhance the game? I think it's a part of trying to make the game better, rather than just saying, well, it's a good league and we're happy playing. And it's how do you develop it? It's a bit like the League of Ireland. How do you make it better? And I think over that, probably the last 6-7 years, we've seen teams go into that full-time mode, and that's how you will improve the league. Obviously, there has to be a check in that, in relation that that can be done from a financial point of view. And it's similar to down here, that the resources and the finances all come from European football. And it's the same problems around TV revenue. You know, gate receipts for us this year have improved really, really well, the same as the League of Ireland. The gates are up in the Northern League a lot. But it's still, there's still, you know, sponsorship deals and other revenue streams are very, very low. So you're, you know, even ourselves, that European money is so important for you to be able to maintain. And to be able to develop the game, you need money, Alan. Mm. And people think, oh, well, you throw money. It's not throwing money at players all the time. It's develop the club as such. And, you know, that's what we're always trying to do. And we've got a really good setup. We've got, like you say, Windsor's a fabulous stadium. We've got our own training facilities. We're involved in a project about building another training facility. We've got girls and boys thriving academies, you know, so it all takes money to run these things, you know, so it's always continuously trying to bring resources into the club.
Would it be the case that Linfield, I mean, you know, we've often talked about the Rosenberg stuff, right? And I'm just talking to you now, I'm realising, Jesus, Linfield are probably the closest club on the island to kind of emulating a Rosenberg kind of a model. The stadium is there, all the infrastructure is there. But what I'm thinking is, you know, that investment, is Linfield struggling a little bit because of, you know, there's lack of investment in the north, or is there's a bit of a, you know, you look at the south, right? There's, you know, business is thriving down here. There's huge foreign investment coming in, the tech industry, the medical industry, and there's always been this, there's been this ongoing dispute that the north, there's not enough investment coming into the north for whatever reason. Is it the case that Linfield could be either on the wrong end of that, or you know why is it that they can't maybe sort of tap into local commerce or get that investment into the club? Is it just the case that the economy in the north is just a little bit undercooked at the moment?
I think it's probably, there's a combination of a few things in that. I think, like you said, we don't have the investment in southern Ireland is huge from all aspects, like you've just said, Stewie. But in regard to that, there hasn't been, in the amount of investments that come into the country over a long period of time, that investment hasn't come through the League of Ireland Football as such. It's now starting to filter in where you've got some owners now coming in that are backing clubs.
Exactly, I agree. I agree with that.
Just because the economy's booming hasn't translated to the football side.
Completely, yeah. In the south, it hasn't. I'm just wondering, is it something that's ready to take off in the north?
I think that's what I was trying to say about building it and developing it. Right. You've got to build an industry to show people that this is worth backing. You know, and it's not just saying, well, we want investors, but you have to show investors why you want them to come in. We want them to come in because we feel this. I know, you know, the football club that I'm involved in at the moment is on a par with anything in this island. Absolutely, you know, but we have to show people that we want to progress the club. We want to be progressive in every way with the club. You know, we want to be inclusive. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do, is to make sure that anybody that wants to be involved in Linfield can be involved at Linfield. And that's how you outside investment. But it's a tough job. I have to be honest, it's probably the toughest part of the job that I've found. Is enticing sponsors and investment.
Does that fall under your remit, Pat?
Yeah, it is, because it's a big part of what we're trying to do, and that's what I'm saying about, you know, the name of the club is so important to get out there and to show people what the club is really about. And like you said, you alluded to about when I went up as a player, that, oh, you're going to Linfield, you're going to Belfast and to the other side. And
get that away from
that. Football is about football as far as I'm concerned, and that's what we're trying to do at the moment. Every club has a history and a tradition, and you've got to stick to that. There's no doubt about that, because if you lose your identity, then you're in serious trouble. But it has to be a broad brush for, you know, and I think it's happening down. I think you've seen that over the last three or four seasons, maybe not that long, maybe the last two or three seasons of the League of Ireland, where League of Ireland clubs have started to realise that we've got to branch out. And they have
football has to clean up its act.
Yeah, but if you take Bowes and Rovers, and I don't want to be taken away from some of the, but the work they've done in their communities is, and that's without. In Rovers' case, probably they do have a serious investor now. But if you take Bowes, they've invested in the structure of the club, which is important, vitally important, and they're reaping the rewards of that. Also, they've got to keep their eye on what goes on the pitch, which is important.
Yeah,
and that's the bit that we have to be mindful of at Linfield. Our supporters expect us to be winning. And like I said, that was the bit that really, you know, got me for the club. But also now there's a point for us at the club to say, how do we develop? It's all right saying we are on a par with anything in the world, and then I firmly believe we are, but we got to go and prove that. We got to be getting their attendance. It's got to be increasing. We got to entice more people into the stadium. People into the ground.
It's a hard sell, isn't it? Do you know why I make that point? Football has this history, right, that we're all very much aware of. And it has a little bit of a, you know, there's a certain culture to the game that might not be looked on favourably in modern times. There's good and bad things to that, so it's a hard sell to try and evolve a culture that can work so well in some respects. And where it works so well is the energy and the crowds. We've all played against Linfield, played against Linfield in the Stanta Cup final. I've never experienced anything like it. Unbelievable. And then that's the positive side, and then the negative side is it's all the other stuff, like, you know. So you're trying to change a culture, which is always a very, very difficult thing. Without going too far the other way, you're trying to.
But as Pat said there, I agree with him, Stu. You don't want to lose that history and identity.
Oh, of course not.
You can't. So it's about embracing all the cultures and getting them all involved.
Yeah, I think both of the leagues probably have similar issues in around, like I've alluded to, around resources, finances that come into the game, stadium facilities, player facilities, spectator facilities. Most of the clubs, north and south, have very similar issues.
Right.
So it's trying to develop, and that's the bit we've got to do as a club, is develop the club to make the people on the outside. The traditional Linfield fans will always come. They, you know, where season ticket sales membership is brilliant, but we've got to try attract.
Do you find just even on what you're saying there, for the game to develop, say, up the north further with more full time teams and get an industry and whatever, it's kind of the same arrogance we have here, but because you're at the top and you're maybe pushing ahead further than others, is there a bit of a reluctance from, maybe no disrespect to lesser teams, but is there a reluctance from them that you want to go one way
Yeah.
And they're holding back to the part-time mentality or that kind of...
And I think you've got to be mindful of that as well. There is clubs within our league. I know from talking to people who are in clubs that they don't see themselves in a full-time setup. They don't have the resources for it. And that's what I'm saying. You've got to be careful how you take people along in the journey, you know. But that doesn't mean that you stand still and you accept, like us as a club, Linfield, we've got to drive what we think the level we can get to, and I firmly believe we can get to a much higher level than we're at the moment. The next step for us is obviously to make some sort of inroads into Europe. We had a taste of that a few seasons ago. It was brilliant, where again we went beyond where we probably realistically should have went and got very close to making a huge step. And I think with new year, and I've said this even outside of the Linfield context, with the new European competition, it gives us all a little bit of hope to say, listen, that's there. But in saying that, we're now in a situation where we missed out being unseeded by, I think, with the same coefficient as Rovers. Rovers get seeded, we miss out, which means you're then facing potentially some huge clubs or potentially Rovers, which would be great. From here,
and you're only a small club.
Yeah.
Linfield and Rovers, I couldn't see that being a big game.
Yeah, no, it'll be tasty, all right, if it happens. But it's
and you're a Rovers fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think once you start at a club, that's your club, isn't it? So, but on that day, I couldn't be, obviously. You know, if it does happen. But listen, there's a lot of tough teams in there we can draw in Europe. But I think the new competition for the clubs in the where you're saying the top five or six clubs. But then there has to be a realisation of the other clubs may not want to get to that level, so they can't be left behind. So it's how you bring everybody along. And we've had this conversation up there. I've spoke to clubs up there in regard to this, and you have to be respectful of their position. I'm in a privileged position at Linfield that we've got what we have, and we've a massive fan base, and we do have resources and finance coming into the club. And some clubs just...
I made this point to Tommy Higgins last week. It's easy to look at it with rose-tinted glasses when you're in the Premier Division and forget about the boys in the First Division. But all of a sudden, if you get relegated, you wouldn't want them pushing ahead and leaving you behind. So there's a balance to be met in terms of...
But I think that's the same in every league, isn't it? I think that's, you know, you see all the leagues. That's, you've got the big clubs, the next, and then you see even in the Premier League, there's a divide now within the Premier League itself. And even in the Championship, maybe down to a point. But I think the key to this... is how do you develop the game here in general? We've spoke about some part-time teams, some full-time teams north, some full-time part-time teams down south. So it's, you know, how do you develop the game? We've got to try to develop the game.
Well, the obvious question, Pat.
Can I come in there?
But this is there's one, and it's the obvious one, and you're best placed out of everyone, I think, to answer this, because you've played up there. Mm. Now you're in a director of football.
You're going to get me into trouble if you ask this question. I know what you're going to ask.
Ask. It's the obvious question. Mm. So...
do you really have to wear that gold chain?
It is the obvious question, because if you have six or seven clubs that want to push on, but you have three or four that don't, and down here you might have four or five or six or whatever, and you know where I'm going with this, the All-Ireland League, is that something, Pat? Obviously there's been discussions in the past, it's died down a little bit, maybe with COVID and stuff, but in terms of developing the game, as you're saying, and pushing on, and with your full-time clubs and whatever, is it the obvious way to go?
Yeah, well listen, I was... involved in a lot of the discussions with Ciarán Lucid in relation to the All-Ireland League, and you know, and again, my club is in a situation where we probably have a lot of our fan base that wouldn't want to go into an All-Ireland League.
The fans wouldn't.
Yeah, I think they'd be very, very mixed in relation to what they have, you know, and again, you have to be mindful as well that there is that division in the island, so it's how you... what I said at the start of this was the dialogue will never hurt anybody. Talk until you get to a point where you make it. The whole thing on this, and I've said this at the very start, what will dictate football in this country is finances. If there's a big backer to an All-Ireland League, clubs will buy into it because they see it as a chance of how to develop the game. And if there's not, and it still doesn't mean, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, that's fine, but we still got to try to develop the both leagues. That's the key to it as well. Because if that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, which is fine. But the leagues have to be developed. There's no doubt about that. And the big issues around it is you've seen it. It's all finances. It's all around finances and resources. And that I'm not talking about in relation to players. I'm talking about in relation to everything else: stadiums, training facilities, spectator facilities. A lot of them are very, very poor.
And you think our facilities down here are very poor, don't you?
I think the facilities in general are poor.
We can't even get pitches right, Alan.
No, they're desperate. I agree. They're desperate.
Yeah, but I think that's where you're talking about investment, Stu. You're right. You talk about investment and people. That's where we're in control of that. That's not anybody else's fault. That's our fault.
Oh, I totally
agree.
We're
in control of that. So if we don't show, and that's why I said to you, alluded to about, we've got to show that we're doing things properly to get people to invest in the clubs. And that's the bit we've got to, and I agree with you. I've done some games this year on the telly and pull my hair out, and you're trying not to talk about pitches, but you just look at them and you think, hang on, I was in Talla for one of the early games and the place is like a billiard table.
Stunning.
And I'm saying to myself, boy, well, this is a council-owned stadium and that's not having a pop or anyone there. The pitch is fantastic. Rovers have done a brilliant job. Daily Mount and Tolka are the same. Why are they not in the same condition? And again, two clubs that I've a lot of time for, that I played for and managed. But there's no excuses for pitches to be
bad. I agree, totally agree.
And that's the bit I'm saying, that's where we let ourselves down. That's not anybody else's fault. That's us. That's our fault within the game to accepting that. And go back to the Shells days, and this is where I probably drove people mad as a manager. To demand off people to say, I want the pitch right.
Yeah, and I remember it well, yeah.
And got to the point where fixed divots myself and got people to cut it now. But that's what you've got to be. You've got to be driven to say, how do you get the thing right here? So if you're not doing it yourself, don't look outside. Don't be blaming other people. All these issues around pitches, they're all very, very easily fixed.
So I was literally going to say, it has to come from the manager. The manager has to go in and demand that pitch is in as best the condition that they can possibly get it in.
But they're the fundamentals, Stuart. It has to come from
the top. If you know, there's a licence criteria for leagues. You know, there's a licence criteria around floodlighting, seating, toilets, everything else. Now, the main thing for a football match is the football pitch.
It's amazing how people...
So, if you know, I've seen some of the pitches at the start of the season. I don't know what happened in Sligo, because the pitch was always really good. But that's not acceptable. But UCD, not acceptable. Daily Mount, not... And people will be saying, oh, you're moaning. But I'm not... And that's where I'm saying, we're never going to improve if we accept that. If we keep accepting that as... You know, our best players in the best league in the country being put onto pitches like that to try to entertain people when their gates are fantastic. You're saying...
There's an acceptance for it. That's the problem.
I think back to when Sky took over even the Premier League in 93. First thing they said, sort your pitches out. Yeah. The stands looked awful. Do you remember for years you're playing with huge big posters behind stands and stands were under construction and you kind of accepted it because they got the pitches right from the start and the product on the pitch was, you know, immediately improved. Immediately. And it went from there.
But you're talking about that's the pitch issue, the training facilities, isn't it? How do you improve players by what they do every day?
Is that something, right, that... We know from working with you, and you touched on a word there, and it's how I think of you, and it's often when I'm looking at managers and players now, it's the one word I always come back to, because you can only look back on your own experiences, and that's the demands, right? So you put huge demands on your players and us and everybody to get better and strive for better and be as professional as possible. And then, obviously, that filters out into the stands and into the pitch and the groundsman and Ollie Byrne and whoever else you're dealing with. You want the best no matter what. So to get people singing like that off the same hymn sheet, is that something you can't instill that in them? Is that not what people's mentality has to be, or else you're struggling from the start? So if the point I'm trying to make is, if we have six or seven managers like that and you're saying it has to be across the board from the top down, but you have a chairman who's just kind of happy to be floating around like and going through the motions and, oh, we're in the league and it's great.
Yeah.
But unless he's maybe off the same... Now, I know you and Ollie would have been at loggerheads, but Ollie still gave you the best if you were demanding of it.
Yeah, I don't think everybody can be the same. So I think, you know, that's the way I was as a player and as a manager. You know, I felt that the more demand you put on good players, the more they would improve, rather than just accept where the level you're at. But I think you know, in relation to how you develop the game, it's probably because you've all types of different individuals within clubs, but like I said, it's about how we improve the structures of the game to be able to get people to say, do you know what, that's a really good product, I want to be involved in it.
Do you think we're miles away from that then?
Yes, I do. At the moment, I think we're a long way away. I look at training facilities for some of the underage teams at League of Ireland level. Some of them have a quarter of a pitch, some of them have half a pitch. How can you develop players? in that sort of scenario. So there's a lot of work to do. There's no doubt there's a hell of a lot of work to do.
So for all the hype and talk of the league is finally on a footing where we can maybe move it forward, develop, attendances are up, you still think, though, we've a long way to go?
Who's saying that, Bo? Twitter?
There is talk, like, obviously, because the new setup in the FEI, and people are saying now that it's a new era, a new regime, we're moving forward, people are putting things in place. That is out there.
The FEI?
Well,
I think...
I was going to ask you that, Pat, in, you know, the association up north compared to the FEI, how is there a difference? Do they do much more up there for the clubs? Are they a little bit more advanced in their
Well, what you find up there, that Niffl run the league within Northern Ireland, the Northern Ireland Football League. They run the actual league, you know, obviously overseen by the IFA.
So it's a separate entity.
You have Niffl who run the league on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, it's governed by the association, so it's a little bit different in that regard. What I've found is they're probably a little bit more open to listening to people at the cold face of the game. And again, you're trying to be fair to people here as well, on the basis that things have changed over the last number of years for the better, obviously. But to be saying the league is better than it has, I'm not so sure about that, to be honest. I've watched a lot of the league games this year, and I'm not sure about that at all.
No, I would agree with you on the football. I'm not saying on the football side, I think it's very average, and I've said that numerous times. I'm just talking about people in terms of their appetite and enthusiasm for the league, and there's more crowds and more people going to match, and people thinking,
there's players coming through the league that maybe
want the international teams and things
I'd agree to a point. I think that a lot of the clubs are probably in a better position now, and they're trying to progress. Like I spoke about earlier on, is how do you progress? And you see some of the work at clubs, and then you go back to what I'm saying about, you know, the first game of the season, you go to a game and you think, oh my God, has nobody looked at the pitch here since the last game of last season? And that's a bit that drives you mad.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where we let ourselves down. That's why I'm saying, if you're looking to bring people in, invest in the game, they have to look at the product and say, that's worth investing in, and that's going places. Is that where we are at the moment? Probably not. Is there work towards that? Absolutely. So it's a big job. It's a continuous job, and it's going to take a bit of time, but we have to strive. I think the key to this is getting people in positions that want to make it better. That's the bit I've always felt with the association. Is there many in there that really want to make the League of Ireland better? We need people who see the League of Ireland, what it is. It's the best league in this country. So drive it to where it should be.
So we've developed
numerous players for international teams back of where we've been. So if this is the best we have, well then put all your resources into it and make it as good as we can. And make an industry in the country where we have people who are employed properly in it. And that's where we've got to get to. There's a lot of work to do, but I think there's good people in certain areas of the game now that can hopefully drive that.
Can I come in there? Because I was going to come in a couple of minutes ago when you were mentioning. I personally feel that we need to get to a stage where our national team is being fed by players from this league, right? Like every other country in the world.
Hang on a second.
If it happens in 100 years, it happens in 100 years.
That's a more realistic
target. That has to be the goal. It has to be. There's no doubt about it. The Premier League will always be the Premier League. And the best of the best will always go there. But there has to be, you know, surely there has to be an ambition that we can start getting more and more players from the domestic game into the national side.
I think if
you get to that stage, then we are in very good shape.
I think to get to that stage, the clubs have to be in a far stronger
completely.
position.
The one point that we need to be really mindful of at the moment is that change in relation to the Brexit rules, where there now are young players, and no matter what we say, our schoolboy clubs developed a lot of good young players and right around the country, and then they went to England or to Scotland or wherever the case may be. So realistically, at that stage of 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, the English were developing our top players, our international players as such. That's not going to happen. That stopped now. So that's a big job of work for someone in the association to say, we're now in a dilemma where we've had a period of British clubs developing
top
our players.
Clubs as well.
Our top players as such. That's changed. And that's where I'm saying go back to our academies at League of Ireland 11, some of them training on a half a pitch, some of them training for an hour on a half a pitch or a quarter of a pitch. That's not good enough. If we're talking about developing our top players that have now can't go, and I've heard the argument to say that's brilliant because our best players are playing, stay in Ireland. I get that, but
only if they're getting.
We have to develop them properly then, and we don't have the facilities to develop them properly at the moment. We don't have the structures to develop them properly at the moment. Don't forget, when they go there, they become full time players.
Yeah.
Now here, a lot of the academies, in fairness, are training 3, 4, 5 nights a week, which is brilliant. But again, like I said, it's facility. So how that's something that I think that has to be at the top of the chain at the moment, is that area where that has now changed for us in relation to our best young players going away, which to a point it is good, but only good if we can develop them here. And at the moment, we don't have the structures in place to do it.
So full time for 16, that kind of thing, is it be able to get our young players into a full time training situation?
Yeah, well, what we did at Linfield last year, we looked at an apprenticeship model where we brought in 5 or 6 young players that we had in our club at 16, 17 that we thought these boys have a chance. And we're sending a lot of players away at the moment as well to England and Scotland. But we for the first time, we brought in a group of 5 or 6 players as apprentices. And brought them into the club as scholars, should I say, and brought them into the club where they're educated and they're training with the first team. This group was with the training with the first team. This group was not training on their own or with an academy. They're actually training with the manager and the first team. So there's 5 or 6 of them in there training with him. They eat with the players and then they get educated individually in the afternoon. We do that in conjunction with David Campbell Soccer in England, who has a great record in the UK for doing this. And it's worked really well. One of them's gone, unfortunately, got to West Ham. One of them's just signed a new 2-year contract with the senior team here. So it's finding ways of how we can make better players. But I honestly feel that dilemma we have at the moment is something that we need a quick fix on, to be able to, someone's got to say, hang on, we need to change this. We need to give the resources. If we're saying, and again, this is a question that I've asked, you know, we've taken that ownership of all the best young players we've developed from away from schoolboy clubs in this country. Away from the great schoolboy clubs in Cork and Dublin and Waterford and Sligo and Galway and everywhere else, and we've handed to the League of Ireland clubs.
Who don't have the structure.
So, and on top of that, you now throw in the fact, well, here you lads, you're keeping them now till they're 18 because of Brexit, so you develop them. That's something we've got to be very mindful of, because that can happen over, you know, 3 or 4 years' time. Are them players being developed to the level, the better players that go away? And listen, we'll always have players who develop. You played with Wesley. He's a late developer and he came through.
Yeah.
But the best ones always went. We don't have that anymore. So we've got to be really careful to say we need to develop our better players. So we need to put the structures in place to make sure the clubs can do that.
Let's throw it out there, right? If a 16-year-old was to go to, I don't know, pick a club, Celtic or Southampton, or, you know, what reimbursed, what would he be getting? What kind of a contract would he be picking up?
It depends what they are. You know, it depends what they are. Whether they get scholar contracts or scholars and pros contracts. So
I think what Pat's saying, though, Stu, never mind the finances of it. It's the actual.
No, it's not about the finances.
Sure, no. I totally get that. So yeah. what kind of support are they getting? They're getting an educational as well as being reimbursed. So there's some sort of
accommodation. Yeah. You could sign. It was YTS in my day, so you get 70 quid a week. But then once you hit 16, sign professional. 300
That's
quid,
what I'm talking about. That's what, I am talking about the 16-year-olds.
There's pluses to this. The pluses is that you're not leaving home, that you're at home with your parents, that you're being educated as well in your own environment. They're all the pluses to it. My concern is around the development of the players from a football point of view. I think they'll develop better as people and as individuals because they're living in a home structure. They're not away from home in digs or wherever the case. Alan did that, I did that. Not ideal. You're at home. You can, you know, there's obviously a schooling structure has to be put around that. But this thing has been landed on us really quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't see, we talk about the academies in League of Ireland being really strong, but they don't have the resources to be able to cope with this. And that's something that the association have got to look at really quickly and say, right, how do we look at this and how do we get the resources in place to be able to make sure that our best players are being developed?
Do you think, Pat, from what you've seen in the new regime, is what we call it now, I suppose, and the advent of the underage structures or the underage leagues, do you think that's enough, or there's enough of an appetite in there with the introduction of those leagues that given maybe another 3, 4, 5, 6 years or whatever, that we'll get to a stage maybe where we are able to do that, what you're saying? Because clearly you don't think that's there now.
No, I think what we've done, we've excluded a lot of people that had real knowledge and development of our young players. I don't think that's good for the game. I think that's, you know, we've taken the schoolboy clubs out of the equation in relation to the development of players. That for me is not good for the game. I think personally the age group for League of Ireland is too young. That's my opinion. Other people will argue the toss and argue the case.
Would you go 15th?
Yeah, listen, again, it's because it's changed now again with kids not being able to go away, then it may differ. But I just feel that, you know, we just said, right, well, what's worked for 50 or 60 years, we're now giving it over to League of Ireland clubs. And there are some League of Ireland clubs are working tremendously hard on it, you know, and a lot of them just don't have the resources to work on. That's my concern, that, you know, and that's go back to that point. The concern is that where are the resources for all these kids to be trained and developed, you know, the way they would have been?
You're talking about a club looking after four, five, six teams now.
Yeah, like, and it's huge impact them from a resource point of view. But, it's about the football side of it is my concern. The football side of it is a major concern about how we're now going to develop them better younger players. And we'll always have players who come through late. So, you know, people make the argument, oh, well, players have developed here. And they have, you know, but by and large, a lot of our players go to England, have gone to England or Scotland at that age group and have developed. And even we see the ones coming through now into the senior international, most of them have come through that system as well. So we just got to be careful that we don't miss a 4 or 5 period where we get to saying, right, well, where's the players now coming from? Because we're not equipped. I don't care what anybody tells me. I've been around the League of Ireland a long time and we're not equipped for the development of our young players. And that's a big job at hand for the association to make sure we meet that demand.
I'm but conscious of time, right, Stuart?
Go on, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to get to something that makes you smile.
Yeah, well, that was probably going off the beaten track a little.
No, that's important stuff, and that's why it's a crying shame to me that you're still not involved. And that's, I want to get to the management stuff, and I also want to talk to you, as I said, something that makes you smile a lot. You mentioned earlier about you started off with a good St. Pat's team and a good manager, and we're lucky enough now to go around to the odd match with you, and we might get a few pints afterwards, and that's when the real good stuff comes out, man. But any time we talk to you about that and some of the players you play with and the older lads, and particularly your face always lights up when you talk about that St. Patrick's athletic group.
Keep it clean now,
Brian hearing. And Johnny Mack and a few
listen, I won't go off a beaten track again, but I had 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, I don't know when it was, we had the Bowes team that won the cup 30 years ago, had a for whatever reason,
Raymond Gregg was there, right?
Alan Bourne and Paul Bourne organised it in Wexford. Don't ask me why they organised it in Wexford, but the amazing thing that I think all bar two players turned up and the manager was
30,
there.
And it was 30 years.
And it was just like we were back in the dressing room with Daly. It was brilliant. I have to be honest, it was a really, really great day. Some played golf, some of us didn't play golf. I think the FA Cup final was on, so the boys who didn't play golf were well on their way before the lads who did play golf came in. But it was a brilliant day. And it was just, like I said, it was just like turning the clock back in the dressing room, and it just all flowed. I think the difference, the Pats team I played in was a team of rejects. I don't think they'll all agree to that. I was released from Chelsea, a lot of the other lads were released from clubs, and Brian just assembled a group of players that were just really talented, but he gelled them together. And we had, you know, from the likes of Damien Bourne, Paddy Dillon, senior players, right down to myself and Curtis Fleming, who were the young bucks in the team at the time. I came back from Chelsea, I think I was 18, and it was a baptism of fire. Let's put it that way. It was incredible. It was a dressing room that, and some of the stuff that went on, and it was hard to believe when you look back now. But what a dressing room, what a group of lads.
You wouldn't change anything. It was unreal.
It was incredible. Now football's changed and society's changed, but Brian just moulded a group of players that were, you know, like I said, we had no great players, but we had a real good spirit and we had some good young players coming through. But the way you went about it in relation to, we hadn't got anything. We'd nothing. We'd about 5 or 6 balls. We trained some nights in St. Michael's Estate. We swept the glass off the pitch. We had to hoose a few youngsters. Brian would say he'd hoose a few youngsters off that were playing football. Get off. Brush the glass off the pitch and train. And went on to win a league title. And, you know, we had the pig pen, they used to call it, behind the goal, the shed end at Richmond. You know, those days when we had to move dead sheep off it and everything, like the train. It was just, it was a time when you know, we'd brilliant characters around the ground. Harry Bowlen was the groundsman, and Harry was brilliant. We, Mark Megan is probably the one you're talking about, Alan. And
I want to meet this.
I haven't seen Mark. I haven't seen Mark in a long, long time. And but what a character. But it was just a different time. It was, when I look back, and even going back to when I managed Hughes, you know, from my end of it, I couldn't have tolerated what happened when I was,
yeah,
when
I know,
I was playing.
I know, yeah.
But you know what, so I love? I know what I love about that, Pat, because as I said, your face lights up when you talk about that time. And you mentioned even meeting up with the lads 30 years later, and it was like being with them yesterday, the crack and all. And what I love about that, though, is, and we touched on it earlier with, you as a manager was tough and hard and fair, but demanded a lot, which was fine. But you also encouraged that in the dressing room and that camaraderie with the lads.
I think that's...
Because I look at I can only go off the experience. And the Shelburne dressing room that we were in, obviously we were training hard, going for leagues, going for whatever it was, with the best players in the country. But the crack was unreal as well. And you encouraged that side of it too.
Yeah, but I think that's even going back to talking about development of players now. You know, young players have to enjoy what they're doing. Because if they don't, they'll become very stale and frustrated with it very, very easily. And even senior players have to enjoy what they're doing. We like you say, that the team we had at Shells was a team of characters as well, strong individuals that basically managed themselves to a point. And, you know, I don't think you've seen me in the dressing room too many times, Mar Baby, on a match day. And that was, but it was, I firmly believe you've got to develop a team, you've got to let them develop as a team together themselves, you know. But the game's completely changed. And that team, that Pat's team, what Brian did with that Pat's team was incredible, because he was miles ahead of his time. Even though he didn't have the resources to be ahead of his time, he was miles ahead of his time in relation to what he was doing at the time of training. And even, you know, going back to individual stuff, he had players doing it. He used to get me to work with Curtis after training. Curtis kicked bleeding lumps out of me, and he'd be thinking, take this fella on again. And Curtis would be glad then, you know. Yeah. Thinking, just take him out. And it was brilliant, because it was individual, but it worked for me and it worked for him. And he was just ahead of what he, like at that stage, I'd never been coached. I'd been at Chelsea and very rarely coached, to be honest. And I come back and Brian was, he was just ahead of his time. We had Billy Baxter, who was the reserve team manager. What a legend in the League of Ireland. You know, the team talks are legendary. You know, it was very little football mentioned in the team talks. If you went to Athlone, you're going to the home of the Barbarians, and be aware of that, and, you know, stuff like that. It was just brilliant. And the bus had bounced home after every game. You know, it was different times. It was different times, but it was enjoyable, really enjoyable.
The story of the kid going down to Sligo?
We went to Sligo with Bows, actually. We were talking about that a couple of weeks ago, and we were sponsored by Bass at the time, and we used to, God rest Marty Price, who died recently. He was a brilliant coach as well, with Eamon and Marty were the staff at the time. Johnny Fallon was the kit man, and Landon and Johnny in it now probably, but We used to have a couple of trays of Labatt's. I don't know whether anyone remembers Labatt's and Bass. And the Bass would be for the staff, and the Labatt's would be for the lads on the way back on the bus. Take the if you won, even if you didn't win. But we got to Sligo one day, and I opened up the side of the bus, and, jeez, where's the kit last? the gargle was off. The trays of Labatt's and the trays of Bass were on the bus. There was no kit. And we had to play in Sligo's away kit. Yeah, I'll never forget it. The shed behind the goal of Sligo. I know where the dressing rooms used to be. It was a narrow gap, and you get tortured, slaughtered coming out by the Sligo supporters. And I remember Tommy Bourne, I think, got carried off, and that was the chant. You're not fit to wear that kit. But Tommy was in there away kit getting carried off. You know? But that was stuff that went on. We were even talking to Lee King, talking about that last week as well. We left Lee and Cove, I think it was, one night, just having a bit of crack. and left him there, and he had to get, I think he got a lift back off two Bowes fans, but he was back in Daly Mount before us. But it was different times. It was brilliant.
And you mentioned here then, obviously, when you became the manager, Pat, right, at Shelburne, and you were saying there you couldn't have tolerated the stuff that was going on back then. Was that hard to separate going from, because you took over when you were still playing, so was that hard to kind of differentiate between I'm in with the lads but I'm not really in with the lads kind of thing?
Yeah, I think one thing that stuck in my mind, I met when I got the Shells job, I met Finbar Flood, God rest him as well, and Ollie in the barn in Tolka on a Saturday morning, and they were offering me the job. I was still playing. I had no intentions of managing at the time. And
did that come out of the blue, that offer?
Yeah, absolutely out of the blue. And I said, yeah, look, I'd give it a go. They wanted to give me a 6-month contract. It was in the transition season that when we went from winter to summer.
Season, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember Finbar saying to me, how are you going to deal with the players that you've played with? And sort of went around my head for a few seconds. And I said, well, look, I'll deal with them the way I think they should be dealt with. You know, I know them as players, but obviously I'm going to be the manager now, and I've got to. And that was difficult because even that Shells team that I played in had a lot of really strong characters as well. The Gagos, you know, really, really strong lads in there as well. And that's the difficult bit of management when you step across the line from being a player to a manager in the club that you've played in. Mm. It's a little bit different maybe if you leave a club and you go to a new club where the players don't know you. But I was stepping into a group of players that I was part of. And you had to disappoint people, but that was... I think that was the way I always looked around. You made that decision, what was good for the club, not what was good for anybody else or individuals, and that's probably the way I sort of managed that. I still meet Alan Reynolds, and he tells me the story every time. I think he told you this one. I think we played in Finn Harps. I played Rennie, and he was really good, really good. And we played at home. We were on the telly, I think, against Trotter the next week, maybe. And now he only told me this, I didn't know this at the time, so I pulled him in the little office upstairs in Tolka, you know, and I said to him, listen, you're not gonna start today. I said, you're not even going to be on the bench. And he's looking at me, you know, because he was brilliant in the game ahead, but he's only telling me then, because he'd done so well in Finn Harps, he went out and got a new pair of boots for the game on the telly on the following Friday. And he said, you didn't even pick me. He said, you didn't pick me, you didn't even put me on the bench. I was sitting in the stand. But there are things you sort of, you think, well, I didn't remember that. Mm. But again, that was me just thinking, right, well, what's best for the day on the game? Finn Harps away. Rennie was the one probably you wanted to go there. Draw it at home, a little bit different, you know, and then you're into, and these are the things that managers, you're into a bench then, you're saying, right, you've got a bench. Draw it, you're probably realistically going to be, if you're going to be behind, you're going to chase the game. Is Rennie going to change? Probably not. If you know, so you're weighing up all these decisions, and that's why people think, well, they're easy, but not easy decisions, because you're thinking about not the 11, but even the 4 or 5 subs at that stage. We had a big squad, as you know.
I was just about to say a big squad.
And you're always disappointing people. But the good thing about that group was they got disappointed, plenty of rows with plenty of players in it, but it never really got to the point where they threw the toys out of the pram or didn't commit to what we were trying to do.
I remember 05, actually, 05. So, I mean, we had huge expectations going into 05, you know. And Owen had been injured for a lot of the start of the season. And I took over as captain, and we lost the Santa Cup final, and things just weren't going well. And we did pick it up, but never really kind of got into full gear. And I remember being really personally disappointed with the season. Like, you know, and Pat used to take people into the office at the end of every season before going into next season. Mm. And I remember calling me, and I was going to go, oh, he's going to fucking hammer me here. He's going to fucking... Oh, I was dreading
it. He never hammered you.
Dreading it. He's going to fucking hammer me. And he just said, look, we just didn't have you this year. And I fucking went through it. It was the best thing you could have said, right? I was absolutely... It's probably the worst thing you could have said to me, but it was the way you said it. He just didn't have you this year. And I went,
fucking... So you were rubbish, Stewie.
You were fucking right. Yeah, by my standards, I was poor, yeah. And I remember going, that's it. So I think I went fucking training straight away, ready to go. But it was the way you said it. It was perfect.
Right, the fact that he's getting a compliment now, Pat, and it's my show, I want you to tell everyone, right? There would have been no Deportivo without me over in Reykjavik. We were down and out. We were like Real Madrid in the Champions League.
But there you go, isn't it?
Down and out.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the bit where you're thinking, even picking squads and subs and thinking, right, well, who might change the game if you're losing it? Who might, if away in Europe, who might, if you're winning it, who might
see
go on
it?
Yeah, and be able to help you see out the game, wherever the case may be. So there's a bigger picture to picking teams. And sometimes players don't see that. And I didn't see that as a player at the time as well, because you think, oh, well, I can do both. I can do that. But it's like you say, that the game in Reykjavik is you know, we were dead and buried. You know, there's no doubt about that, and we changed the game.
But the one on that, on a serious note, like, because I was so excited, obviously, signing. It was such a big move for me. The way things panned out was a fucking disaster. But that's where, and I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but the fact that she stuck by me so much, it was amazing, really, because it got to the stage where I remember having a chat with you and saying, ringing me one morning, and obviously I was living with Raji and Ollie, and the boys were going in training, saying, Al, don't come in training. We have to be seen to be maybe that you're, and ending up in the courts.
Yeah.
And Ollie, to be fair as well, I remember one day, and I want to ask you about Ollie as well, because he was such a brilliant character. And like that in the league, he was always fighting in his corner for the league, and we don't have them fellas now. I remember coming down from Ross Mini in, it was about 2 weeks into this debacle, and I trained away anyway, and I remember coming down and, all right, you into the car, into the taxi, right? And he brought me into the taxi, right? And they made two amazing things. We went around, like, say, Fran Rooney, Theo Dunn, all these people or whatever, UCD fellas, Tony Sher, we're going over and back to houses and knocking on doors and everything, Stu, right? Spent the whole day with him. It was till about 8 or 9 in the evening, all day in and out of town, in a taxi. Yeah. He wasn't even driving. And then someone would say, all right, Theo Dunn, right? 086-93. He knew all the numbers. They weren't logged in the phone. Yeah. They were all just numbers. And he was ringing them out.
Like
unbelievable.
Man,
yeah. Like, oh, yeah, when you think back.
He had a great knowledge, Ollie, and a great brain. Fairness to him, like his brain was probably ahead of his time as well in relation to football. It was just obviously it was a pity the way it went in the end, but his commitment to the club was incredible, like in all aspects of the club. But you know, he was some character. And then you think about people like you being able to talk about that Pat's team, which was brilliant, and the Bowes team, but he was probably, and it was probably one of the hardest decisions I've made, was to leave Shelbourne. At the time, even though things were really bad,
but we'd no choice, Pat.
No, it wasn't. But it's like, you know, I'd spent 9 or 10 years at Shells, and worked with Ollie. Even as a player, he'd have been close, as you know, he'd been close to the players. Where you can go to close where directors are bored, you don't get really close. But Ollie was close to the players because he was so engrossed in trying to make things better. But to leave was really difficult at the time, you know. And then obviously the way things went with his health was really sad, you know. And I had a relationship with him that was probably, it was like a father and son at some stage.
Yeah,
he'd be ringing you half 5 in the morning, you know.
Yeah.
And he just ring you and then forget what he rang you for.
Yeah,
you know? that's just the way he was,
really, yeah.
and he was just.
I know it's probably hard to differentiate, Pat, between, because you were successful then, obviously, at Bowes as well, and the brilliant teams that you had. I think it's the 5 league titles. Is it 5 league titles you won as a manager here?
5 as a manager, yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But is that Shell's time your fondest time in the league as the manager? Or is that unfair question?
Well, you like the Bowes.
I don't think it's an unfair question. I think when you get into a position as a manager, it's hard to say. You know, you're in the group of players at Shells that was brilliant. I think the thing for the Shells bit for me was I'd played there for a long period of time, been successful as a player. When I went in initially as a manager, we struggled. We got beaten in Europe by Hibernians and Malta. We got knocked out of cup early. I got sent off. I was still playing. I got sent off, and then I decided to stop playing. And we were struggling. Then we went on a really brilliant run and nearly caught Bowes. I think it was Stephen Kenny was the manager of Bowes, wasn't he, at the time, was he, when they won the short league. And we nearly caught them in the end. So to be able to come from a player at 32, that's all it was when I got the job at Shells, and then to be able to lead Shells to a couple of league titles as well, back to back, and then to win another one. So that sort of, as a young manager, was really satisfactory, the run in Europe. The Bowes thing is a bit different, because when I went into Bowes, in fairness to Sean Connor, he had signed a lot of good players. Really, really strong squad.
Shells.
Yeah, from Shells and around. And that's a different dynamic then. You're going into a club where there's huge expectations because of what you have and the resource you have. And it's hard to say, you know, teams. And I enjoyed, I've been very lucky. The only club I went to that didn't really work out for me was Derry City. And I'd still maintain, you know, I had a good relationship with the people of the club, and it just didn't work out and it was for nothing else bar it didn't work. It was just one of them things. I went up, I turned the job down 3 times, and I shouldn't have taken it in the end. And I did, and I went against probably what I always do, is gut feeling. I'm normally one that sticks with a gut feeling and says, yeah, right, I'm going to go with that because that feels best. And I didn't with Derry, Jim Roddy, and continued to to come down and see me. And Jim's a brilliant fellow. I met Jim a while ago. He's a great lad. It just didn't work out, and that's the way it was. But it's hard to say. People always ask that question, who was the best side? The Shells team is a very, very good. The Bowes team I had was a really good side as well. So, and both of them were very successful. So, and good, great clubs, played with both and managed both. So
you mentioned you were only 32 taking over, Pat, and obviously you're still looking very young and fresh. Why are you not managing now? I think it's a crying shame, to be honest with you.
I like the part of the game. I really like the part. When I went to Scotland to manage Hibs, it sort of opened my eyes to what management is about. And I had people in Scotland would have always thought that Hibs was a tough job because they were always tight in relation to a big, big, massive club, brilliant club. I had a brilliant chairman in Rod Petrie, and I had a backup in a club where I just had to manage. That's all I had to do was manage, make sure the players were prepared and tactically aware and ready for games on a Saturday or a midweek game. And I've seen the difference of how clubs should be run as from a management point of view, and how a manager should be allowed to do what he's been employed to do. And that's when I came back and I took the Rovers job. And in fairness to Rovers, they probably are the best club down here at the moment, and the structures are really good. But I'd sort of, once I had lost the hunger, but after Rovers, when I just thought, you know, I'm not going into another club where I've got to do what I had to do at Bowes, what I had to do. And that's not being critical of people there, because that's just the way the clubs are. And that's the bit, you go back to that bit about how do you make the game better. And I went into Waterford. Lee Power asked me to go into Waterford with Rennie. Well, I brought Rennie into Waterford as the manager, and I just said to him, you manage. Don't worry about anything else. I'll look after everything else, whether it's contracts, whether it's problems, whether it's buses, whether it's whatever it is, let me do that. You manage. And it worked with three, and it worked really well. Let him at his job, never interfered. And I think that's a key to that position as well, that he's a manager. You've got to give him his head to manage, but also you've got to make it easy for him to manage. And when I left Hibs, that was probably the time. And in fairness, if it wasn't a Rovers job, I wouldn't have went back into League of Ireland football when I came back from Scotland. I always wanted to play for Rovers, and I always wanted to play for Rovers. And sometimes you wonder, Rovers is my team. I grew up as a big Rovers fan, followed them home and away. Still have a really big soft spot for them. But it's the one club where it never worked out for me as a player, as a manager. Yeah. So you sort of... Well, to a point,
or,
as a manager,
Stephen.
We sort of got to Europe in the 2 years I was there, but like I said, if it hadn't been Rovers, I probably wouldn't have went back into management. And I just had enough of it. I'd 15 years of it, and I didn't want to go back in to doing what I'd done previously, because it drained you. It drained you, and that's the bit where we've got to look at how the clubs are structured. And I think that position of letting a manager do his job, but there has to be a real trust between the manager and that person, that, like I said with Alan, that you're allowed, go and do your job, don't worry about anything else, I'll look after everything else, you just make sure the team's ready to win and play on a Friday night or whatever the case may be if it's a midweek game.
And is it done now?
Yeah, no, I won't go back into management. I'm more than happy in the position I'm in at the moment. I love the job I'm doing at the moment. I still feel I've got a lot to contribute to the game.
You've promised me a Stewie day out in Windsor Park as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll absolutely. But
a few points of tenants.
Yeah. No,
Labatt.
Yeah. No, Labatt.
I'll bring that.
You'll
have
to bring that yourself. But no, it's. I think the managing end, I'm definitely done with. It's. I think the other side of the game I really like at the moment, but I still feel that I've got a contribution to make to the game. And hopefully I can continue to make that where I am at Linfield, because it's been a really good club to me, and you'd like to be able to give something back to them as well.
Well, Pat, you have a massive contribution to make to the game, and you've had a massive contribution to this show, so thanks very much. It's been a pleasure. You know we're big fans, but it's great to have you on, and thanks a million for your time.
No, and it's great to talk, because like yourselves, with the team I was away with last week, and even the players that I managed on my own last week, because we did a bit with Dermot Keighley for a book that Dermot's doing. And
oh no,
it was
in trouble.
And you sometimes with this stuff we meet because we're involved sort of in the media end of it, but there's a lot of players that I've managed that I haven't met since I managed them, and it's like,
you love
good
to meet.
Yeah, it's good to have that conversation, because like you said, the Rennie story, your story, you know, there's always stuff that you think, geez, I never thought of that, and how it affected people, and you hope that you've helped them along the way, I suppose.
Well, they've absolutely helped, and you're still helping us, so Pat, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
Stuart, thank you.
Thank you.
As thanks, always. Matt. Thanks to Paul. Paul's heading off to Dubai. Fancy pants out there. Heading off to Dubai. So we're not going to have a show next week because Paul's away. Blame him. But no, because the football season is on a break, we're going to have a break ourselves. But thanks to Benetti Menswear, we will be back the following week when the football resumes. And obviously there's international games to review as well. So we'll talk to you next week, folks. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.